From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Talk show host and political pundit Chris Matthews started talking hardball more than a decade ago now, and audiences listened. His style is fast and loud and in your face if it needs to be. Last night he took on Democratic Congressman Rahm Emanuel over the Iraq War.
Congressman, people out there are wondering, why did they elect the Democrats to end the war if the war is still going?
Guests squirm in the hot seat, rise to the challenge, or stammer out their views under Matthews' signature barrage. Now the TV talk show man wants us to learn life lessons from the targets of his interrogation. You should live, he says, like a politician. This hour, On Point, Chris Matthews on politics and life and the role of the media in the 08 campaign. Joining me now in our studio is Chris Matthews, host of MSNBC's Hardball and NBC's The Chris Matthews Show. He's in the thick of it, just where he likes to be. 2 weeks ago, he moderated the GOP presidential debate in Dearborn, Michigan. He's out with a new book called Life's a Campaign. Let's see. Subtitle, What Politics Has Taught Me About Friendship, Rivalry, Reputation, and Success. He's ready to go on any topic. Join us, Chris Matthews. Thanks for being
here. Good morning.
Hey, good to have you. What is it like running those presidential debates? You were in Dearborn just a couple of weeks ago doing it. Unlike the show? I mean, what's it like to be on there facing all those, well, in that case, white guys?
Well, I had made a couple tough comments about the administration a few weeks before that, and I thought there were going to be some incoming against me as moderator. There wasn't any. I thought that the second debate, I did the Reagan Library debate a couple months before the first debate,
yep,
which was really nervous, nerve-wracking getting ready for that one. That's where we exposed the three members of the Republican entry team there as opponents or critics of evolution, which I thought was kind of embarrassing for the party.
Right. You harped hard on that. They didn't like it, but
they didn't
like it.
Actually, that question was, I think, sent in by somebody by email, but we hit them on that. This time around, I asked Fred Thompson, since we were 20 minutes from the Canadian border, who the Prime Minister of Canada was. Only in America, a country with such hubris, would that be considered a trick or gotcha question. Right. I mean, here we are. I was thinking if Steve Harper had called up a president after he'd been elected and said, "Hi, I'm Steve Harper," and
Steve
the president
who?
Would have said, "Who? I'm the man who shares the longest border in the world with you. I'm your prime minister. I'm your partner up here in North America."
Yeah, just by the way.
The arrogance of this country, the hubris of not even caring. And I guess I was hoping, of course, he wouldn't know. I mean, what am I kidding? And was it Andy Hiller up here?
Yes.
Yeah, the same deal.
He asked
the more obscure
this was
questions.
Pakistan
like, in yeah, you know, in the people 04. Can get away with that. And the only one that Bush got, I would have gotten maybe by just guessing, like saying Smith in England. He said Lee in Taiwan. That's a pretty good ethnic bet. But I was going to. I had a plan to proceed around the room to the other lesser lights on the candidate board there and try to prove that four or five of them didn't know. And then I would have made my point. Why don't we develop friendship and alliances in the world instead of going to war alone? And maybe we ought to listen to some of these allies like the Canadians who don't believe in this war. We'd be better off.
Who do you think it's going to be out of this primary season? You watch and you talk it every single night, so people are starting to assume things. Hillary Giuliani. Is Chris Matthews assuming anything yet?
I think that although Giuliani hasn't gone up much, Thompson may make a run at this. It was in the Globe today with this anti-immigrant thing, which may well be a groundswell issue. It could well be all across the country, especially since Bush has been very murky on it, and so has McCain. And Giuliani certainly has been pro-illegal immigrant. So he might be able to spark something with that. That seems to work in most places in the world on the right. And I think
hit the immigration button, whether it's France
it works,
or
I mean,
you
yeah,
name
it seems
it,
to work
Germany
everywhere.
Lately.
It works in Switzerland now. Yep. It's working in a lot of places. There's a lot of immigration in the world because of economics. And the world is divided between places you can make a living and places you can't. And people are moving. Like they were when we started this country.
Yep.
So I think that that could be a hot one. But right now, I'd say in terms of smart politics, it's Hillary, who's now apparently, according to the LA Times poll that came out today, she's up almost about half the vote. And the poor guy, Obama, who's not really a politician from what I can tell, is down in the teens now.
Yeah.
He's losing.
You
not
said,
just, she's not just winning. He is losing.
Why do you think that is? I mean, he's got all that charisma, just ripples with it. why losing?
Well, you're like me, I guess. I was in Springfield, Illinois, when he announced. It was 3 degrees below zero, and there were 17,000 people there. Most of them white people, actually, if that's important to some people to notice. They were all cheering like mad. This young Lindbergh, this young JFK, who looked like one of those two guys, an iconic, lanky guy with short hair on the sides, right between Lincoln's old place where he was a legislator and where he was a lawyer on that corner.
Made for TV.
Everything was dynamite. I thought, this is something big. He'll catch Hillary by May. But he never began a campaign. He never campaigned.
What do you mean? He's out there.
He never ran for president. I don't know what he's doing.
He's giving speeches all the time. He was in Boston just recently. I mean, what?
He's not on book tour. He's not an author. He's a campaigner for president, and he's not acting like a campaigner. To win a presidential election, you must engage the opposition. You must begin to raise the attention of the public to the fact it's a choice between you and the other person by clever, positive, entertaining conversation. He should have been taking Hillary's words from day one, bringing them out for public scrutiny, enjoying the differences between his and Hillary's position on the war in Iraq. Instead, I think he waited for people to notice how great he was, what a great writer he was, what a great orator he was, and sort of flocked to him independent of their judgment of the other candidates, including Hillary. That's not how voters think.
You can't take the high road
and win. No, you can't pretend that you're in a race as some sort of solipsist, that you're in the race all by yourself. Lincoln may have been able to do that. Apparently, that's how he won his race. He went around the country giving speeches, and people were impressed. Today, it's a much more a joined world where, you know, you can't say I'm running for senator against an incumbent, for example, and Hillary's basically the incumbent, and not mention you're running against Hillary. You have to bring it up.
He started to bring her up, but last night you looked at Hillary with your crew at Hardball, and you said the Republicans, they are going to skunk Hillary just the way they did Dukakis in 88. So she's the winner.
Well, the Chinese curse, like we wanted the whole world to be capitalist. Guess what? It is. And we're competing with the BRIC countries now, the Brazilians and the Indians, the Chinese, the Russians.
I'm slow. I don't get the analogy.
Well, this is a case where there's going to be a battle. Hillary's going to win it probably in January.
Yeah, yeah.
So she'll get what she wants, and she'll be exposed to the Republicans for 11 months.
A brutal
line to defend her name and reputation, which she spent all these years developing through difficulties.
Yeah. What's the artillery going to be in the skunking?
Oh, God only knows. It could be going back to the travel office. It could go back to the $100,000 windfall she got on the cattle futures. It could go back to Whitewater. It could go back to Bill's behavior. It could be there's so much food out there for them to forage on.
Americans still want to eat that food? They want to still hear
here's
that?
Here's what I think the game will be. I think the game will be play on gender, but don't say so. So there's a lot of men out there my age, all ages, who are thinking, maybe it's time.
What's your age, by the way?
I'm 61.
You're timeless. Okay.
Maybe it's time for a woman president. Mm-hmm. Let's be fair. And I think a lot of people from the metropolitan areas are taking that view, which is like when men gave women the vote back in 20. Let's be fair about this.
Yeah.
She's a very competent person.
Mm-hmm.
She's better than anybody else running.
Mm-hmm.
Let's let her be president. That would be good for the country. That's the positive view. Then you have the more traditional view of the guys with the guns and the boats out in the Midwest and the sort of retro thinking are going, I don't know. And they're just waiting for a permission slip. They were not even willing to tell their wives.
To vote no.
Yeah. They're not going to tell their wife, it's not against you, dear, or your mm-hmm. gender. And our daughter, of course, would make a great president.
But here's the problem.
Maggie Thatcher was great. Maybe this Benazir Bhutto might be a good president. Mm-hmm. But they're looking for that excuse. And what the Republicans are going to try to do for 11 months is come up with some reason to give traditional women, and modern women too, some reason why they got a problem with Hillary. But when people start coming up to me and saying, I could never forgive Hillary for that travel office mess. Mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. That's a reason to be opposed to somebody.
You know, you've got.
By the way, it's human nature. Inevitably, if you don't like somebody,
you find a reason.
That's it.
You've got 36 years in Washington now. I didn't know your biography. I didn't know you started as a Capitol Hill cop. What? Literally with the starched shirt and the gun on your hip. That's where Chris Matthews started as Washington.
Well, I mean, that's a little unclear. I started with a patronage job. I was working for a senator, and the first job they would give me when they hired me on was, you work in the office during the daytime, and then you moonlight as a cop.
And that's how you'll make
your
living.
That's how you got the salary. Yeah, that's how I made my money in the first 3 months. Then they made me a legislative assistant to the senator. So I was writing speeches within 3 months of starting this gig, but for 3 months I was walking around from 3 o'clock in the afternoon after I was done at work carrying a gun, 38 special. I was checked out in that, which was kind of rudimentary, to say the least.
Yeah.
In fact, I really didn't get checked out, but they acted like they had. And I was like guarding the Pentagon Papers, as I write about in the book, against all matter of folk. And but that was an experience, too, because I got to work with a lot of West Virginia guys, a lot of MPs, double dippers that come back to work for the government. I learned a culture that I hadn't been familiar with before, country
and,
boys.
And then writing speeches for Jimmy Carter, half a dozen years, right at the elbow of Tip O'Neill, and a whole lot more for you, Chris Matthews. And now, after all that, you're coming out with life advice, a sort of life coach, Chris Matthews. Everybody seems to be doing this these days. We talked with James Watson of Watson and Crick, of all things. He's doing it these days. What do you do giving
because
life advice, and why live like a politician?
Because,
why that?
Well, we could do this for a couple hours. Look, I think there's a reason why people succeed in public life. Tip O'Neill, 50 straight elections. I'm not talking about the fly-by-night guys. I'm talking about people who year after year after year keep getting elected by the people. They have basic knowledge of human nature, which is Machiavellian. It's counterintuitive, and I try to share it here because I've observed it. They're different than us. Politicians are not normal people, but they succeed because they understand people better than anybody else.
You got a handful from Jon Stewart on The Daily Show the other night. He said, this is a recipe for sadness.
He's against it. He's fine.
Well,
because his whole idea is to be snarky and to make fun of politicians from a distance. I've spent 36 years inside them. I have a different interest. My interest is to show I've learned something. His interest is in saying there's nothing to be learned.
But American politicians are so unpopular. What is Bush, 25% now? Congress, 11%?
You think I didn't know that when I wrote this book?
Of course not.
You think they were popular last week?
We'll come back and find out how.
That's what's called the counterintuitive. Remember Hemingway defended bullfighting to the old ladies, worried about the horses? That's what I'm doing.
We're talking this hour with host of MSNBC's Hardball, Chris Matthews, TV talk show man and political pundit, now turned life coach. He says, model your life on the lives and insights of politicians. His new book is Life's a Campaign, What Politics Has Taught Me About Friendship, Rivalry, Reputation, and Success. Chris went on Jon Stewart's Daily Show. Well, that was right. Stewart read Life's a Campaign. Here's what he had to say to Chris Matthews about getting life pointers from politicians.
I did read the book.
And what did you find in it?
I thought that it was a recipe for sadness. Only because, and I say this to you honestly, as I read it, I thought, this strikes me as artifice. It's if you live book,
that's true. Not true.
Your life will be strategy. And if your life is strategy, you'll be unhappy.
Not true.
This strikes me as saying that success is finite.
Chris Matthews took it on and let Jon Stewart know just how he felt.
You are unbelievable. This is a book interview from hell.
No,
this is the worst interview I've ever had in my life.
No.
The book interview from hell. Okay, it made good television.
I'm not sure he read it, but you know, here's the thing. Here's my great premise question. If you've got a 20-year-old at home, you want the kid to read this book because it's what you don't learn in school. The kids bust their humps in school. They get good grades. They get in college. They go to grad school. They go to law school, med school, whatever, business school, and they come out and they don't know how people behave. They've got to understand that the trick of life is to ask for things. Ask for investors. Ask for sales. Ask for jobs. Ask for promotions. One of the things, and don't be self-reliant. The more people give you breaks, the more people will invest in you. These are the counterintuitive things that politicians know in their hearts and guts, how to ask for things. And I'll stick to that main thing.
Okay. But you're the Catholic kid, the Holy Cross
grad.
That's
the key thing is to ask.
Ask, fine. But I mean, right at the outset, you know, your perspective here is, you say, leave it to the amateurs to believe how people are supposed to behave.
Right.
They know the secrets, the politicians, of how people actually do behave. And
true.
But right there, you know, Stewart says there's nothing in this book about be good, be competent. You say that's the Bible. That's been
right.
written.
Huh?
It sounds
right.
kind of. Isn't that a little cynical? Isn't that?
No. I think that you're better off engaging. And I think people that try to live life alone, like a hermit, or they wait for somebody to call and say, "What are your dreams and ambitions? Can I help you with them?" That's not how life works.
But it's not just about living. Don't live life alone. You're saying here, you know, listen, don't think about how things are supposed to be. Think about how they are. I mean, but that's the, you know, take the Bible. I mean, that's the voice of the devil when he crawls out of the grass, who always says that. Don't dream about how things should be. Think about how things are. Come on, Dr. Faustus,
let's go. I'll tell you, the sincerest answer I can give you is I hope my kids understand how to get ahead and pursue their ambitions. I have a kid who wants to be an actor, a kid who wants to be a filmmaker, a daughter who wants to be a lawyer. The one thing that will hold them back is that sort of careful, humble Catholic school experience we all went through, where you're taught to sort of be nice and wait your turn and hope that people will come to you. No, you got to be more aggressive. But you have to get out there and ask for things.
I hear it, and you've got Dale Carnegie and everybody else.
We disagree. We disagree.
Maybe
no,
it
you
works.
And I disagree.
We may.
I know. I think we do. I think you think your role here is to discourage ambition. My role is to encourage
absolutely
it.
Not.
Absolutely
not. But maybe there's
it.
A fuller definition
John
of it.
John Stewart's goal is to laugh at things. My goal is to help people achieve their goals in life, not to laugh at things. Laughing at things is a way of getting through the night, and I'm all for it. But if it's a way of avoiding getting where you want to get because you make fun of everybody else who's trying to, that's a dodge.
I never
comedians
make fun of ambition. I'm
dodge.
All for ambition. Made the country great, makes people great right now. But holding politicians up as the model is just curious to me. You know the public.
Right.
The vote is in. I mean, politicians, their ratings are in the cellar.
That's why this book's important.
But Americans are kind of voting against your thesis. They're saying there's something fundamentally we don't like about that.
If they don't want to get ahead, if they don't want to understand human nature, they're different than me. I want to understand it. I spent years trying to figure out how these guys got there. They didn't get there because they're smarter than us or better looking or whatever or better people. They got there because they understood a few basic things like listening rather than talking, like being optimistic rather than pessimistic, but asking for things from people, whether it's to volunteer for them. A good politician can walk up to you and say, I'm running for president. Make me your president. That's an amazing request. Or give me $50,000 or work for me for free for 2 years. If you have that ability, that chutzpah, as they say in Yiddish, if you have that chutzpah to do those things, you will get off your butt. You'll stop hiding at home. You'll put a suit of clothes on, go out and get a job and get somewhere. And so many kids today are stuck in their 20s because they're so well-educated and pampered. They don't know how to go out and get it. And this book's about how to do it.
Don't pay attention to the way life's supposed to be. Pay attention to the way it is, says Chris Matthews.
Exactly.
Chris Matthews and model
me.
On the politicians.
You got me.
Okay, here you are. You've come out like gangbusters against the war. I mean, you're on it every night. You were beating up Rahm Emanuel last night saying, Democrats, why aren't you doing something?
You're
why
dead
are you
right.
into this? But you also said last night, you quoted your new hero, you say, Ulysses S. Grant, who said you never win in America by opposing war.
Right.
So how does that add up for you? How does it add up for the Democrats?
I think the Democrats have to show some guts and say what they believe. We live in a time where maybe this isn't exactly a war. Maybe it's not like armies meeting in the field. Maybe the real enemy over there isn't the atomic bomb right now. The enemy may well be the hatred of those people of the West against the occupation, against Western influence in their part of the world, against the oil deals cut by their potentates. That may well be the weapon we face that leads 14-year-old kids and 15-year-old kids to decide to become suicide bombers.
But that sounds like George Bush saying we're going to go in and clean it all up and get rid of that weapon.
No. His approach is that it's very much like a hole-in-the-wall gang, like in Butch Cassidy. Okay, there's 17 members of this gang. Let's go kill each one until we've got them all.
He said we're going to bring democracy to the Middle East. That's more than 14 guys in a hole.
That's a proposition I don't believe in.
And you don't believe he believed in it?
I don't believe that you can do it by force.
Did he believe in it when he said it?
He's a sudden scholar.
A sudden scholar.
Remember Henry V? Where did we find this sudden scholar?
Right.
Because just like the clerics that taught Henry V to go to France, there have been ideologues who have taught this president to do it too.
So what do you think the Democrats ought to be doing?
I think they ought to be offering a change, a deliverance.
But cut off the money? That's their only option here, right?
I think they have to do it.
Just say no to the, what is it, $200 billion now, practically?
Apparently, it's going to be, according to USA Today, it's $2.6 trillion now for both wars, Afghanistan and Iraq. It's going to cost Americans $8,000 a head.
Mm.
I think it's never ending. I think anybody who's listening closely to the president here is an infinity war here. It's an Orwellian war. It's not going to end. He doesn't want to talk about it ending. In fact, I think he expects it to continue through his presidency, and I assume he wants to see the next president, whether it's Hillary or Rudy or someone, to continue it through their presidencies. He doesn't want to leave the Middle East as a constabulary force. I mean, he wants to have police power over a big portion of the Middle East.
You were taunting Rahm Emanuel last night, saying, you Democrats, you're afraid to stand up to this war. You're just afraid it's going to come back and bite you. If they are they wrong?
You know, sometimes I think they're afraid of a couple people. They're more conservative members of their party who may be contributors. They're afraid of that the president might turn lucky. That's what I think they're afraid of sometimes. Like the war will begin to look good. All of a sudden they will have missed the bus.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, how else do you explain Edwards, Biden, Dodd, Hillary, and Kerry all supporting the war resolution? They didn't want to miss the bus because that's what Bill Clinton did back in '90 in supporting the war, the first Gulf War. And I think they were placing their bets on the war.
I mean, he took the same position, Bill, and now
they took the position that said the best bet is to be for the war. And that's what I said when I quoted U.S. Grant. Unfortunately, that is American history. The jingoist position generally is the safe one.
You think if Hillary turns around and goes four square against the war, she gets out of the skunking that you predict for her?
She'd win my heart.
That's one vote. Let's get calls. We've got a lot who want to join us. Aaron,
guts.
Aaron is calling from Boston.
I wish Rudy would do it.
Well, what? Say no to the war?
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
He may do it.
All he does is
he
swings
may
his
do it.
Sword
oh,
like
Tom. You're so naive. He could do it the day after the election, the nomination. The minute he's the Republican nominee,
yeah,
he could
we're
say,
getting out of there.
Remember George Bush Senior? I want a kinder, gentler. What, kinder, gentler than Dukakis? It was kinder, gentler than Reagan.
He's going to climb off the horseback, Rudy, and stand.
The only way you continue in office after 8 years of your
in the
party
gun barrel?
In office is to offer change.
Hey, okay, let's get a call. Aaron in Boston. You're on the air with Chris Matthews.
Hi, Tom, Chris.
Hi.
How are you today?
Hi.
Chris, my wife and I watch both your shows. We both love it, and we love David Schuster especially.
I love David Schuster.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the man. But basically,
every day I get up and I talk to him, and I'm so excited after he tells me what he's going to do on the show that night. Then he gives me the script, and I overlook the. I go over through the script. I always leave it the way it is. I almost always, and I just love him. His thrill, his passion. He's great.
Well, he was great on Plaingate. We really appreciate.
And just my favorite story. By the way, I wouldn't mind ripping the scab off the Scooter Libby story every night of my life. It's one thing to commute the guy's sentence. Fine, we didn't make a big issue about that. But to try to teach us all to be amnesiacs and to pretend like there wasn't criminality in the White House, that the chief of staff to the vice president, the assistant to the president, operating clearly in the office, not out robbing gas stations, but doing what he was supposed to be doing in the office, which is carrying on this effort to confect and then defend the case for war, and then to act like it never happened. When I said a couple weeks ago there was criminality in the White House, everybody says, what was he talking about? This is what's really bad about America now. You're supposed to not only forgive the behavior, but to forget it.
You said if Dick Cheney had been president during
the
Cuban Missile Crisis, we'd all be living
under the parking lot. Well, just think about Curtis LeMay. Do you think he would have said, no, Curtis, that's not really the way to go about it, bomb Cuba? Come on.
Aaron, what's your question
for
Chris?
The next thing the Russians would have done is going into Berlin, and you know it.
But right, Chris, let me ask you this. Like, following up on speaking on amnesiacs, isn't that what kind of Hillary and Howard Wolfson are doing with the war? I mean, Barack isn't allowed to attack her. And then every time Barack tries to do that, then Wolfson says, oh, I'm really disappointed. This is the man of the politics of hope. And it seems the media just lets the...
Well, I don't, but you're dead right. That's the tactic. Play up to him. Play up to his St. Francis imagery.
Yeah.
And every time he acts like a politician, attack him. And then kneecap him by saying he wants to talk to Holocaust deniers. So make that into the issue, too. Play the ethnic card. I'm telling you, you're right. Hillary has set this thing up, and Obama's let him do it. Let her do it. So there can't be a campaign. That's what she's basically said. It's an SDI
system.
Don't
touch me, it would be
wrong. If
you
attack, if you criticize me, oh, that's being naughty, and therefore you shouldn't do that. Well, what are you supposed to do, the front runner? You take on the front runner, or else the front runner is the front runner.
Let's get a call from Jackie in Melrose, Massachusetts. Jackie, you're on the air.
Hi, I've loved Chris Matthews since before the war, when he always said, I'm against this war. Do you think we should begin this war? I don't think so. Chris, I wish you would attack the constant phrase from the president and vice president. We're at war on terrorism. War on terrorism. That is only a metaphor, like Johnson's war on poverty, meaning only how can we lessen it? How can we eliminate poverty? How can we eliminate terrorism? You don't eliminate terrorism by going around and killing a few hundred thousand more Muslims who already are against us and who performed 9/11.
Chris, you got a fan. Do we drop the phrase? Do we change the strategy?
Well, we have to understand what the battle's about, as the caller makes clear. The battle, if you want to stop somebody from blowing up one of our buildings or killing a bunch of us 5 years from now, think about the 14-year-olds, because it'll be a 19-year-old who does it. And you know when you have to get to those people? You got to figure out what in that Cairo cafe right now is the battle between wanting to come to Michigan State and become an engineer in this country with the best schools in the world, or is it to bomb us and try to kill us because you're desperate? I tell you, it's that. It isn't, and I'm not being super liberal here. I'm just saying that's what the battle is. It's not like we're fighting the Wehrmacht or the Red Army. We're fighting the hatred in those cafes.
If Hillary should win or Obama,
bombs on them and blow up.
Does the war on terror go away if Hillary or Obama or some Democrat should win? Does that language get shelved?
It doesn't end till we figure out how to deal and defuse, because that's the right word for it, not defeat. Defuse. It's one thing to resent another person. It's another thing to hate them. But when that hate reaches such a level you want to kill yourself to kill them, That's when you got to deal. That's when it becomes a bomb that's going to blow up and blow up and blow up, no matter how many people you kill.
Jackie, thanks for your call. Let's go to Buffalo, New York. And Paul, you're on the air with Chris Matthews.
Hi, Tom. I'm a little surprised that Chris can invoke Orwell in his description of the war. Not too long ago, when our president was landing on flight decks, he was using such language as high-flying jet star, amazing leadership. He won the war. He was
no, you aren't. You're wrong.
Commander.
You're wrong.
I mean, those are the
you're
things
wrong.
That he spoke of. Where was the dissent and the protest when it mattered most? When everybody, well, not everybody, when a large portion of our country was all riled up and excited about going over there and taking care of Saddam and taking care of terrorism, Mr. Matthews was one of its biggest supporters in just applauding.
Paul, stick with us. He doesn't like the way you say
no,
Mr.
I just
Matthews.
Think, anybody listening now? Anybody listening now who's watched Hardball? Starting at when it started 10 years ago and watched me during the build-up to war, starting after 9/11, saw me opposing the war with Iraq from the day there was first a glimmer of it in that first meeting at Camp David a couple days after 9/11 when Wolfowitz tried to raise the issue and he was shouted down by the president. He said, work through channels, and I had a source on that. And I began to watch this thing and challenge it. And sometime before Thanksgiving, in mid to late November of 2001, I heard the president start talking about going to war with Iraq. I was opposed to that war from the beginning. During the brief time when we invaded, the very first couple of days, when it looked like this thing was going to be completely the opposite of what I thought it was going to be, that it was going to be a cakewalk, that there was going to be a political transition like there was in Romania with Ceausescu and people like that. It was going to be a quick decapping. And for a brief moment, of course I was cheering the fact that I was wrong. I wanted to be wrong. I wanted everything I thought to be wrong because it was good for America if that wasn't going to be a bloody war and create more resentment. Yeah, you're right, but the caller is not up to date and has not paid attention.
Why are
at
you
all.
Still getting this incoming
and I,
because then?
Because people...
Media
there's,
Matters
there's
calls you
little,
misinformer of the
little,
year.
No,
Stephanie
cute,
Miller
no,
calls you right-wing
there's
tool.
A cute, there's a cute little... anti-war crowd that wants to be exclusive. They don't want anybody else to have been right before them. It bothers them. It's like a little precious little thing they harbor, that they're the only anti-war people. They don't want to be the majority. They want to be cute and small. And I'll tell you, all you got to do is, buddy, check the records, go back and check the transcripts. You have access to them. You don't know what you're talking
Paul,
about.
What about it? Do you want to be cute and small and exclusive, or are you convinced Chris was on the wrong side of this?
It's not a matter of convincing. It's the
listen,
record.
No, I listen.
You know the record, sir?
I can say that I was against the war, too, at my point. I'm talking about this is May 1st of 2003 when the country was all riled up about this. And with all his supposed experience, with political experience, he should have been the one saying, hey, let's calm down a second and realize nothing has been won yet. The real battle has not yet begun. If we look at history, if we look at insurgencies, if we look at these Islamic states or Muslim states, we have a real problem ahead of us. Let me go back. If he's one who wants to refer to Wolfowitz and seeing or knowing his inside sources, he should have used that to tell his audience, wait a second, nothing has been won yet. You stood up or you stood on your show or sat in your show and you were using these words saying he won the war.
I don't understand what you're saying.
But Chris, you say there was that ripple, there was that chance, and you were for it, and Paul says that was just too emotional. You should have seen the bigger picture here.
Well, that's a fair... You mean, cosmically, you know, you're right. I mean, I should have understood... I mean, certainly the history of that part of the world is that the white guys, the Europeans, always win the first round. If that's your point, you're very smart about it. That is the case. And not thinking that the first round, the French won the first round, the Crusaders won the first round, the Russians won the first round in Afghanistan, the British in Afghanistan. Every time a European country's gone in there, a white country from the north or whatever from the west, they've done very well in the first going because it has been a cakewalk.
Is it too much to ask a public pundit like you to be thinking that way
that
in the midst of
two,
mission accomplished?
I think it was asking a lot of me to not want this to succeed. I wanted it to work. I wasn't sitting back there saying, gee whiz, I hope we blew it.
We're talking this hour with host of MSNBC's Hardball, Chris Matthews, TV talk show man and political pundit, now turned life coach. He says, model your life on the lives and insights of politicians. The new book is Life's a Campaign. Let's go to Jackson, South Carolina, and Brenda. Hi, Brenda. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have two questions for Chris. First, what has life taught you, living in Washington, about friendship? And second, having seen it all in Washington, having seen the Supreme Court install Bush, looking at Blackwater and how the war is run, looking at the domestic programs that we're going to have to live with the consequences of for generations, watching the Pentagon finding excuses not to take care of wounded returning soldiers, like declaring PTSD to be pre-existing personality disorders, and on and on and on, and the disgraces of specific politicians that just seem endless. What is the greatest shame in your view?
Mr. Matthews?
Well, that's a hell of a catalog. I recognize all those topics, and they certainly are serious.
And you're still taking inspiration from Washington.
You're missing the point of what I've written about. I've written about years and years of watching people who have been successful in understanding human nature. Now,
but to what end? I don't think she's missing it. I mean, you look at for lessons
well,
in
to
friendship
whatever end
in Washington.
You put it, whatever
a lot
end
of Americans look at Washington and see a snake pit.
But whatever end you put it. If you think ignorance of human nature is helpful in life, you're making a big mistake. The more you understand about how people behave, the more successful you'll be in dealing with people. If you just want to be a critic and sit back and criticize everything that's going on around you, that's a comfortable position. But if you want to do something in your life, you're going to have to, whether you're young or old, you're going to have to deal with people. And it's very helpful to understand them and understand how people react positively or negatively to your behavior.
But come on, Chris, a lot of people look at Washington, the situation the country's in, and you can easily imagine them saying, my gosh, if these are the models, and the models, yes, they may be effective at getting what they want, but here's where we've come to. This doesn't exactly look like the ideal.
There are human traits that are very effective in dealing with other people, whether it's listening to people rather than ranting at them, whether it's being positive rather than negative, whether it's being able to ask for help or try to do things yourself, or recognize the need for rivalry of ideas and ambition and not take it personal. These are traits that help you in life. Now, if you want to ask me about current politics, clearly I'm on your side. I mean, I agree with you that I wish that the Democrats would take a risk and become the opposition party. I wish they would say, no, we're not backing the budget this year. We're not going to back this latest call for $200 billion. We're simply not going to back that war policy. But there aren't enough of them to vote 100%. It's not that they can't get Republicans to join them. That's bogus. They could stop the budget process right now if they chose to by simply not funding the war. But they don't want to risk it because they're afraid that if there's a calamity in the field over there, the president will go on national television and say, those soldiers are dead today because they didn't get the ammo. The reinforcements didn't arrive. The Humvees didn't get there with the protective covering. And therefore, these Democrats killed those people. He will do that. If he's ruthless enough to do that, they got to deal with the fact they're dealing with a ruthless opponent. I'm not sure they are willing to play that level, but they're going to have to because this guy's willing to win. Bush wants to win. The Democrats, I'm not sure, are willing to be as tough as he is.
Brenda looks at everything, a lot of what's going on in Washington, and says, you know, why don't all these traits of knowing how to work people and work your will add up to better
policy?
Because
the people aren't better.
The people?
The ones there now.
The politicians.
I think we've had in the past and throughout our history, we've been very blessed with leaders like Reagan, Tip O'Neill, FDR, Kennedy, people that were willing to make big judgments on behalf of the country. You don't have to agree with them. Eisenhower certainly was able to get us out of Korea. FDR dealt with the Depression, and certainly Kennedy changed us into a new area of optimism. And Reagan in his own way did that in ending the Cold War. You need grand people. I don't think any of those men would have taken us into Iraq. I don't think any of them would have believed in hiring mercenaries to deal with our security problems over in Iraq the way that's been done with Blackwater. I don't think they would have made those decisions. The weakness of the current crowd is obviously in contradiction to our history. If our history was built on the people running it right now, we wouldn't have had our history. That's fairly obvious.
Let's take a call from San Francisco. Joby, you're on the air with Chris Matthews.
Hello, Tom and Chris.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi there. Let me preface my questions with the comment that, you know, we, the American people, depend on you, the press, to be vibrant and strong and very inquisitive and to unearth uncomfortable truths from our politicians. With that, going back to your comments about Hillary, you know, it just seems that there's this anointed front-runner mentality, and other candidates such as Dodd and Edwards seem to be getting short shrift from the press in general. And, you know, with that, you talk about all of these background issues about Hillary, travel, gay, the cow stock, et cetera. And that's all just background noise. The problem with Hillary is that she's not a leader. She's sitting in the Senate right now, the sitting U.S. Senator. She's talking about what she's going to do.
So what do you want from Chris Matthews, Joby? Do you want him to have Dodd and Edwards on every night? Every other week?
Not every night, but you know, just a little bit more well-rounded investigation into what the views are that we can be treated to as the American people, rather than just sitting back and saying, oh, it's going to be Hillary and Obama, and then ultimately Hillary.
Done deal. Let us pick it up. Chris, what about it?
Well, we're trying to get Biden on tonight. In fact, I had a meeting with my producers an hour ago. We think we can get him to talk about the war cost issue, which has just emerged on the front page of the we've had Biden on a lot. We've had people on we can get on, whether it's Huckabee or Duncan Hunter or Ron Paul, or, you know, we can't get it. Irony, you're right. We do talk a lot about Hillary being the front runner. The L.A. Times out there today just reported that Obama's down to the double digit to the teens. He's failing as a candidate to challenge her. The problem you have is sort of in the shape of the race. You've got two people poised to take her over, that's Edwards and Obama, who are splitting the vote, the anti-Hillary vote, and they're not that effective in this campaign, where you have a very strong bench behind them, led by Richardson and Biden and those people and Dodd. That's a very strong bench, but they're kept from getting beyond those two guys that are right behind her.
Is that part of the fault of the punditocracy? We live in the age of pundits.
We can't stop the fact that Edwards is making the strongest attack on Hillary of anybody, that Obama has the most excitement around him. We can't stop that, or that Richardson isn't as organized as the other guys.
Yeah, but you can say, in spite of that, they're skunked. They're not happening. It's over.
Well, I'm not ready to say that the two guys right behind her are finished yet, because I don't think they, well, they might be, actually. I don't know whether the best shot at her beating her right now is even there. I'll be honest with you, Carr. I can't see. You say try to keep this deck shuffled and keep it wide open.
Edwards,
and yet I don't see any of these guys making their kick, really taking a run. Biden won't criticize Hillary. Obama doesn't seem to want to. Edwards does, but they're all glancing blows. Richardson is very attractive, and he's an uneven performer who seems like he didn't know that was the day the debate was going to be held. You know, you get the sense that he rushes in the room.
The debate's on?
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, it's not our fault that these guys, and they are all men, have not been effective in challenging her.
Take it to the GOP side. What about there? Do you see more fluidity?
That's wide open.
How might that unfold here?
Wide open, gentlemen. I have to tell you, everybody watching right now, that is a race that may not get to a conclusion until next year in St. Paul in September when they meet at their convention, because I can see Rudy using the unit rule of the big states like California, where it's by congressional district, or Florida, which is by state, or Pennsylvania, or New York, or New Jersey, or Illinois. I can see Rudy on February 5th, Tsunami Tuesday, taking all the big states, sweeping all the delegates, and yet never getting up to 50%, because the Bible Belt will resist him to some extent.
And then what happens?
He has to cut a deal with somebody, a Thompson, probably, who will give him enough delegates to get 50% before
deal?
The convention.
Thompson is VP?
Put him on
I don't
ticket.
Think so.
Yeah.
Really?
I think
VP
he has
Fred
to do
Thompson?
Something like that. Oh, no, that's what has to happen. And that may be the lucky break the Republicans get, because they have to deal. They have to seal a deal between their secular wing, which is Rudy Giuliani, and their religious wing, or Baptist, Southern Baptist wing.
And the ticket may be the way.
And they may have to do what will be the only way they can win. For example, if Rudy picks a lightweight for his ticket, if he picks somebody that's not a big name, I don't think it'll work. I think he needs a very strong Southern running mate.
Would Huckabee run with Rudy? Would Thompson run with Rudy?
Giuliani Huckabee sounds like a calliope.
There's a lot of E's in there.
It's too funny sounding. Literally too funny. Like Vilsack, the name doesn't sound right for Hillary. I think it's going to be Giuliani Thompson or something like Thompson actually would be a very good vice president if you think about it. He would fit that role.
Would look good at the state funerals.
He looks good in an easy boy.
Hey, let me ask you about Mitt Romney and this amazing thing.
No, actually, Thompson, let's not be too light of him. His latest kick on immigration, opposing immigration right now, illegal immigration, could well stir the Republican grassroots. He could actually get something out of that.
Talk about Romney for a second. Had this just first this funny, I don't know what you want to call it, quote, yesterday, day before, where he said he confused Osama bin Laden and Barack Obama. Said Barack Obama calling on radicals, jihadists of all different types to come together in Iraq. Holy smokes. What about the Romney campaign?
Well, it's funny because if you read it on print, I'm not sure what I didn't hear it in tape. Yeah. I'm not sure about the inflection. But if you read it, you're not sure who he's talking about, because it seems like he's talking about Barack Obama, and he really does mean him, because he says these Democrats.
But then it flips, and he says Barack Obama's calling on jihadists.
Well,
I don't think he means Obama.
Look, I don't know if you've ever made this mistake, but I think I made it at some point or other. I think it was a pure accident. But boy, when you read it, you get the feeling he thinks Barack Obama's a terrorist.
Well,
it's very strange.
He's not the first guy to mess up or have some little
I'm sure
evil
I made a
fun
mistake
with
I said last night on the show, I'm sure I made that mistake myself.
But what about his candidacy? Romney.
I have a hard time figuring it out. I think he'll do well. He won up here because he took on Shannon O'Brien, and because Shannon O'Brien had the very young age for abortion without parental permission, and it just struck people as just too far out. And beating Jane Swift on her traveling or
all
whatever.
Massachusetts stuff,
he just had some real breaks there. Mm-hmm. And he had ran before against Teddy, and he was a familiar face. He also posed as a pro-choice, pro-gay rights guy, and that he got into under the cover. He made the cut in Massachusetts politics. But I can see him winning in Iowa with all the money he's putting in there, and maybe winning in New Hampshire because of geography, but I don't see it traveling very well.
Let's go get some calls.
I think the Mormon thing, and this isn't fair, maybe.
Yeah.
It may not be fair at all to talk about religion. Generally, it's a bad thing in America, but I think it's going to be a real challenge for him in the South.
Harder than a Catholic thing in the hands of JFK?
Well, back in those days, the South was solid Democrat, so Kennedy had that advantage. And secondly, religion wasn't talked about except sort of an ethnic thing. There weren't issues like abortion rights and gay marriage and stem cell.
Those
issues today are very hard to separate from your moral beliefs and your whole philosophy. So I think religion is relevant today, in a way that it probably wasn't politically relevant 40 years ago.
Let's get a call from Toronto, Canada. Mike, you're on the air with Chris Matthews.
How are you doing today, Chris?
Hi.
How are you doing today, Tom?
Okay.
Time is short, so I'll be very quick.
Yep.
I think something which is truly anathema, that as a Republican, from liberal pundits, whether Chris would admit that he's a liberal pundit, but he definitely leans to the left, he started off saying that Hillary, who is the front runner, the Republicans will find some way to attack her, that people in the Midwest with their guns, the white men, who have a problem with their gender. Now, the Republicans and conservatives who voted Margaret Thatcher or Golda Meir into office constantly are being attacked as quasi or closet racist. I think it's very dangerous and also inconsistent, because Barack Obama, as you mentioned, Chris, when he does attack Hillary, when he does play the political card, she plays or she would play the ethnic card or the race card. He spoke to Holocaust.
Where are you going, Mike? I'm not following.
Well, he did just that with Republicans, suggesting that their problem with Hillary is insincere and it's truly based on gender. And I think pundits on his side constantly frame Republicans and conservatives as being a problem.
No, I said they will use
I'm sorry.
Maybe I wasn't clear. I said the Republicans will use the gender issue to bring down Hillary. They will find a way to use it, yes. I believe that is pure politics, and they will do that, yeah.
Mike, thanks. Let's get one from North Andover, Massachusetts. Jim, you're on the air.
Hey, Chris. How are you doing?
Hi.
Hardball watcher every night. Love the show.
Thank you.
I had a question about money and politics and how you see that as having evolved over the years, you know, from back in the Tip O'Neill days to now with lobbying and campaign contributions. And how much time politicians actually spend doing the work of government versus doing fundraising nowadays.
Money
well, it's terrible. They'll
change.
Sit out in front of the Democratic Club on a sunny day getting their tans, watching the trains go by in Washington while they dial for dollars. I think the Republicans have the same deal over at their club. They've set it up off campus so it's legal. But they do really sit there, and I'm sure the pitches are pretty obvious, and they're targeted to the person they're talking to.
Tip O'Neill needed money. Was it different?
He didn't spend any money running for re-election. He never had a re-election. But you know what's changed? There was a time in the 50s where a guy like Gale McGee, who was a college professor at the University of Wyoming, could get elected to the Senate. Can you imagine a college professor getting elected today? Not that we need a lot of them, but we'd like to have a few of them. In other words, a person of limited means but a good ability to express themselves.
That was you, 1974. You ran for Congress, said,
right.
I'm not going to take any money.
I know.
That went nowhere then. Is it different now?
It's ridiculous. The governor of Pennsylvania, Eddie Rendell, was a very popular mayor of Philadelphia where I grew up. He spent $40 million becoming governor. You know what? That's ridiculous, because if you multiply that by 50 states, roughly, I mean, the presidential elections are relatively cheap compared to being elected mayor of New York. Mike Bloomberg, $70 million. He wouldn't be mayor except for he spent that money.
Does Corzine, it change policy?
Corzine. No, you get a lot of dilettantes. You get a lot of self-financers, they're called.
But you get a different country out the other end of
you
that pipeline.
You get a plutocracy. You get people with enormous wealth, a Hamiltonian form of government, wealthy people running the government. How many senators are just... I mean, Tip used to say, when he was in his very Irish mood, he would say, the Senate's filled with the idiot sons of the rich. Well, it's getting there. A lot of self-made men, too, of course.
You still having fun? 10 years,
yeah,
counting
I am,
on a hardball?
I'll tell you, this potpourri of responses today to me is so interesting. You know, the beauty of my business is you only need 2% of the country to like you to make a living, I think.
You're not going to get Paul, our caller Paul, over
no,
here.
I think he's
reading,
tough.
You said May 1st, 2003 about Bush. He won the war. We're
well,
proud
you
of
know
our
what?
President.
I got to tell you.
Women like the president.
I am. Well, look, these are numbers. the fact of the matter is, I really wanted to be wrong. All my instincts, everything from the Peace Corps and learning third world countries and the way they react.
Swaziland in the late 60s.
Everything in me says people don't like to be invaded. They hate occupation. The more the occupation, the more they hate it, the more they are willing to kill the invader. Everything taught me that. And then I saw, well, wait a minute. Maybe this is going to be like Eastern Europe, where all they wanted to do was topple the bad guy and would be popular and be able to get out of there in a few months. You know, I was hoping. You know, maybe the caller's right in saying history said it wasn't going to work. History said it wasn't going to work. But I was hoping it would, because there's always the exception, caller, where it might just work. And I'm not going to root against my country if there's a chance we can be right. I don't think we're right now.
Chris Matthews, host of MSNBC's Hardball and NBC's The Chris Matthews Show. His new book is Life's a Campaign, What Politics Has Taught Me About Friendship, Rivalry, Reputation, and Success. Chris Matthews, thanks for joining us.
Buy the book.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.